Spacey is a global co-working and conference community. We've had our fingers on the pulse of co-working since 2012, and we've connected thousands of operators, both in person and online. On the Juicy Podcast, we talk with the people making it happen day in and day out. Let's get to it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Juicy Podcast. I have Tim Hosse of General Provisions with me. How the hell are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty well. Days away from Juicy with you, so excitement is in the air.
Yeah, for sure. But I want to know, like, how are you as a human? Not your work, you.
Yeah, well, I often default to the micro when people ask me this, but outside of distractions left and right, I'm doing well. I'm blessed. We have three healthy kids. I've got a wife that loves her job. I'm pursuing my passion. So right now, things are great. I think that as a startup operator, I've launched quite a few companies. And I think that right now, I can tell you that it's a lot better being in some maturity than some of the chaos of early days. And we don't have anything figured out. We have a long way to go and everything that I touch. But I'm sleeping well. And that's a lot different than my 20-something years when it's go, 24/7. Because I actually look at that person and I don't even know how I used to be able to do it. So things are good. Things are good.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Yeah, my 20s are a straight up blur. But I've been prioritizing sleep for 3 years. I've been working with my Oura Ring and really prioritizing sleep. And what I have found is once you start getting really great, consistent sleep, it's addictive.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I love it.
The wearable helps. I'm a Whoop guy. And that definitely, I didn't think I was going to use the data or like it as much as I have. But that definitely is a little piece of accountability that keeps me straight. And, you know, I know that you have a sobriety journey. And even with me, who's just wasn't really intentionally dropping drinking, having a wearable like that really smacks you in the face when I have one drink has been mm-hmm. super helpful in my life.
Well, it's funny too, because with my ring, like a lot of times, like if I eat late, I won't have good sleep and it'll be like, did you eat late? I'm like, oh my gosh, I did, because it really screws up your sleep. And yeah. So now, like when I want to go for that snack at 8 o'clock because I'm bored or whatever, I don't, because it'll screw up my sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, wins for tech. I mean, tech is helping us here. So it's overall, it's been a helpful part of my life. Nothing is perfect right now, but overall, at the macro level, I'm feeling pretty thankful for what everything I've been given lately.
Oh, I love that. Gratitude is huge. All right. So let's jump into the General Provision story, because I don't think a lot of people know how long you guys have been around. So if you can just kind of take me through, like, what got you started and why did we only hear about you in the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, nobody knows who we are because I've never really connected with the industry until, you know, you really forced me into a little bit more connectivity in the industry. So that's part of it. But my journey here, I'm an entrepreneur. I've been in tech. Specifically, I'm a designer by trade. So everything from a first principle standpoint for me really comes from visual problem solving. That's kind of how I began my career. And I've applied that to different mediums throughout my life. And, you know, now even when we're designing spaces, I think that's a really nice superpower to have as far as layout and user experience fundamentally. But we were a tech company. I had a corporate career. I left that corporate career to launch a tech firm that was building software for other companies. As that company grew, we needed an office, and unceremoniously, we decided to share it. However, the more important part of that story is that I discovered co-working in late 2006 when I was on that corporate journey traveling around for work. And that was at the point in the co-working timeline where there were no private offices. It was a group of eclectic people with shared interests, sharing rent in a warehouse. And that was the magical moment for me in co-working, when I walked in the door and was instantly able to feel community and connectivity with people that were building similar mm-hmm. things or building overall. And so when I had the opportunity and the need to build my own facility, that is what I wanted to recreate. It didn't exist in our area of the world. We were in South Florida. There wasn't a whole lot of this happening. The word co-working wasn't passed around a whole lot. And mm-hmm. I didn't have a model to go from. I wasn't chasing Regis. I wasn't chasing WeWork. I was trying to build something that felt right for the community that we were trying to create. And even though we needed some desks in a shared space, we had a lot of questions in the early days of what is this thing, right? You walk in the door, people would say, what is this? And what are you doing here? And for the first 5 years, not 5 years, I should say for the first 2.5, 3 years, we didn't really have a good answer. The answer was we weren't building a business. We were building a community. And so to answer your question where I came from, the calling of building community is really what brought me into this world. And it actually what keeps me motivated continually, because I know that's the overused term in our industry and I have a lot of thoughts on that, but truly it is how I got into this world. And so we created a business out of it accidentally. We were basically trying to create an experience first. We were trying to create a brand first, and that evolved into a viable business, but it didn't have to be for the first couple of years. It was just taking some of our overhead out of our rent bill. And that was the original intention, right? So that was very, very humble beginnings in the early days. And we grew 3 times in the first 3 years. And fast forward to today, now we have committed to this industry, committed to the business model, figuring it out a different way. We have a different flavor. We think we're special just like everybody else, but I can share some more of those thoughts here as we talk.
Well, I'm real interested. I want to double down on the overuse of the term community, because I'm not offended by that at all. Which I don't know if you're offended, but I'm just not offended by that at all. I tend to start using belonging a lot more, and I love seeing other people parrot that. But I think like community and belonging are things that are unique about co-working and set us apart from the, you know, flexible workspace, which to me is the real estate people trying to do co-working, and they don't have community or belonging usually. So I think that they're good terms to differentiate co-working.
I like the way you put that for sure. I would definitely tell you that I put myself in the camp that was a bit offended by the overuse of the term community. And that's really just the nature of my personality more than anything else. Not a deeply intellectual thought on it, and other than I just kept seeing it kind of stolen and used in places where there wasn't really any intentionality, or, you know, just because there is a body of people that does not represent a community and a building does not represent a community. Yeah, and so that's definitely where I started to go a little bit sour on the overuse of the term.
I hear you. I can see that. So I noticed on your website, and you guys should go look at their website, because, and is it generalprovision.com?
Generalprovision.com, correct.
Okay. Because I do a lot of website audits in the Juicy community, and I'm very opinionated about websites. And I think they need to be a lot better in our industry. And I think when you don't pay attention to your website, you're really making a huge mistake, because it's often the very first connection to you is your website. You know, I look up somebody on Google Maps and then I immediately go to their website. And so, like, it's really important. Your website is really great. I really like it. It's clear you're a designer. But on there, I saw the term the platform. And I'm like, oh, have you built software for General Provision?
We have, yes. Thanks for noticing. You know, positioning and differentiation has really been front and center for us for the last 3 to 4 years, especially as we've gotten further into the industry, especially with, you know, trading notes and hearing some great inspiration from the GC community and other people that have been there and done that. By accident, because I've been an outsider with some intentionality for a long time, I didn't know how different we were as we were building our own thing, right? We were building a community. We were building what we felt was needed. We were using the data from our members to pivot and to make the right decisions, sometimes the wrong decisions. But the point is, we were pretty heads down. And when we came heads up and we started to look around, we realized that the co-working industry was building something different than what we were building. And that is completely fine.
How so?
Yeah. So the reality is, we were serving a different customer. The real estate world, the larger co-working space products, were largely focusing on getting the next seat in an enterprise company, right? Like adding a larger team, adding more people from that company. Mm-hmm. And from day one, because we were building really the tech community in South Florida, we came from the bottom up for serving remote workers. And as we grew, we absolutely attracted larger clientele. And as we had a product that served larger teams, that became more relevant. But the full circle journey for us is that we began serving remote workers, and then COVID came, and then we ended up tripling down on remote workers. Now, really what that means is, if you're asking how so, you know, we model our spaces out with really micro offices. You know, we have 2-person offices by design. We in mass, we have a couple larger spaces, but for the most part, we try to stay pretty uniform in our office size, because most of our customers are smaller operators, smaller teams, and independents. And when a larger team does come by or has some interest, we can give them a block of offices that are near each other. And if that doesn't work for them, you know, there's other reasons why that we're not a good fit. But to kind of come back to what else we're doing differently, the reality is there's just experiential intentionality. And I think when the world was shifting towards post-COVID co-working, where do we land on this? How much servicing goes into meeting members' needs? How much hospitality goes into office? That conversation, as interesting as it is, we felt as though we had surpassed that conversation years ago because we had decided that we were going to be the operation that outservices our competitors. And so when a tiny little operator like us was dropping in spaces in South Florida, building offices and building workspaces, building general provision product, we knew that we could be outbuilt, we could be outspent. We didn't have the dollars to compete at the furniture level or at the build out level, but we knew that we had the creativity and the ingenuity to compete at the service level. So that takes some instinctive decision making, but it certainly for us felt like the only thing that we could do to really shine. And so by the time that we came into a mature company and business model, we realized that we were well past the growing pains or the figuring out phases of how do you put a barista in a space or how do you fully create programming and events and bring in all these amenities like massage and yoga and really serve your clientele as opposed to, you know, just the straight real estate model of, you know, we'll put one community manager in the space and hopefully we fill it up and the members take care of themselves. Self-service kitchen and, you know, do-it-yourself printing is not really what we think of hospitality. And so we went so deep into the service side that we knew that we were a hospitality company very early in our journey. And the net of that question is that, you know, we serve a different clientele. We're missional for making remote work sustainable. And we're high touch hospitality from a services standpoint.
Love it. Love it. I'm assuming you've read Unreasonable Hospitality.
I have. Yes.
Yeah. So good. And I love that. And it's so great to hear because so often I hear co-working spaces freaking out because, you know, they're like, Industrious is coming across the street and WeWork is next to them. I'm like, that is fantastic news. It means you hit the jackpot on your location. You've got a great location. And what people will do is they will go visit everybody and they will go where they fit, where they belong, where they feel community that they connect with. And maybe some people connect with WeWork and some people connect with Industrious and some people connect with General Provision. I'm always like, don't worry about the competitor. Worry about what you're doing and double down on what makes you unique, which is 100% what you've done. And yeah, how many locations do you guys have now?
We're currently operating only one location in South Florida. We're going to be adding density in South Florida. I think, as you know, Liz, I live in Nashville. So this is a market that we've put a lot of time in as well. So we're hoping to get into the market here in Nashville pretty soon. But the reality is I'm heavily focused in bringing as much of our product as needed to the South Florida market first. And we just doubled down in our flagship space in downtown Fort Lauderdale. So last year, as a small company, last year's big initiative was to get through that construction phase and fill it up. And, you know, we did that within 6 months. We were at capacity. So now we're back on the growth mode of looking for new locations and dialing in what that growth strategy looks like. You know, we were very conservative in our fundraising and growth efforts because I actually think that there's tons of room to grow in our single location, even though we've hit, you know, we're sold out of offices and we have this healthy base of membership. We're just figuring out our events business, which is going to be a seven-figure line item for this one location. There's a lot that is still working and a lot of growth to move into out of this one singular location. So we want to be as ready and have as much know-how to really get before we jump into the next location. But just one, we're just this little operator in South Florida.
Well, I know you're just this little operator, but you're actually a very successful, long-term, accomplished operator in South Florida. And I can think of 100 operators that are now being like, ask him about that event thing. Ask him about that event thing. And I know we talked about it a little bit the last time I saw you. So tell me what you guys are doing in events, because very few spaces have a seven-figure events revenue to talk about.
Yeah. We're not there yet. We're chasing it. It's going to be accomplished here. It's new for us with this much intentionality. So just to take one step back, this all comes from being deeply opinionated about the future of work. And I don't love that term either, because I've been remote since 2010, building remote companies since 2010. And this felt very natural for me and the people around me for a long time. And I think COVID just validated what we hoped the future of work was going to look like back then. And so all that to say, most of our event business right now is meeting the needs of remote teams and hybrid teams that need to gather and need to connect. And we have some pretty incredible amenities that we built into this one location. You know, we launched a space with a 100-person theater, which is a very attractive event space that's flexible space that is used as common area during the day. And then we sell it as events during the evenings, which is an important distinction. It's not just dead space for most of the time.
That's totally what I did in my space in Austin as well. That it was half of the space was open during the day, was my open co-working, and at night it was my event space.
That's exactly right. Now that, as we have grown the event business, has become a little bit of a problem because it's a very unique and attractive space and people want to book it for events during the
retreats,
day.
Retreats, I bet. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are you doing a lot of retreats?
Yep. And enough with that data point, enough of those like, hey, we can't accommodate that 10 a.m. retreat event because it's our common area. That was the signal that we needed to offer something comparable when we took over the building next door and expanded. So now we have training space and a balcony space that really serves that need as well. But the point is, just within the last year, we've taken on actual sales staff to be more intentional about marketing exclusive event growth. And that's
I would really like to see you guys get a little beach bungalow that could be used as a retreat space that I could rent on the regular. That would be amazing.
So I think you're saying something that may be a dream, but it is absolutely where we're looking next, to be honest. So, you know, when I haven't used the word club yet, but
you know, I'm a futurist.
Yeah, we're here for this. This is absolutely the path we want to take. I mean, we're in Fort Lauderdale. We're in South Florida. We are a beach town. This matters to us. So we're definitely more of a hub and spoke future for us, right? We have an HQ. Mm-hmm. We're not going to put 30,000 square foot spaces on the beach, and I'm not going to put 30,000 square foot spaces in my current market. We're absolutely going to be looking for some more smaller satellite spaces that serve and roll up to our main flagship downtown. And in that high priority set is finding the right beach location. That's already become an important conversation with our members.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen what Kiln did in Park City, but they did a really cool retreat space in Park City. And Park City is just like a 30-minute drive from Salt Lake City. And it's a really cool little space. And I'm like, this is so smart.
I can't wait to see it. I haven't seen that space, but I will next week.
For sure.
Juicy is heading to Manchester. Who said the capital should have all the fun? We had to share the love with the north of England. Join us in the UK on June 6th and 7th for Juicy Manchester. We'll have a two-day programme where the vibrant cityscape meets co-working innovation, surrounded by Manchester's iconic red brick buildings. Did you know that Manchester is not only famed for its culture and rich music scene, but its symbol for the past 250 years is the worker bee, representing a city that was built from the ground by its hardworking people? How many will you be able to spot? We invite you to join our community for a real-time co-working and hospitality experience in the heart of this dynamic city. Manchester, with its pioneering spirit and thriving co-working scene, is the perfect backdrop for Juicy UK. For more information on Juicy Manchester, head to uk.juicy.co. And don't forget, Juicy UK returns to London in October 2014. Speakers and more to come. See you there.
So what are some of the parts of the event business that you've learned that you wish you knew earlier?
I think that we're still learning, but what I wish we had the ability to do earlier is to integrate food and beverage more deeply from day one. We had to grow into it for many different reasons, whether it was the cost of the investment or licensing or staffing. But, you know, one thing that we definitely learned was that there was an opportunity there to capture margin. Because part of planning an event at this scale is planning food and beverage as well. And
so are you doing F&B?
We are, yeah. So we have a full in-house cafe, and then we're growing out our catering business. All catering does come through us right now, But we have an offsite partner right now. And I think that we're in the next year probably going to be investing into infrastructure to help go a little bit more integrated into the space.
I love that. Yeah, that's a huge topic. And we're addressing it at Juicy as well with Brad from Hub Australia and Gentry from Industrious, who has a background in hospitality and was like an Equinox and stuff, because it is such a thing. And I think the reason it's such a thing is as there's more and more co-working spaces, you have to look at ways to differentiate yourself. And, you know, I've used this example a lot. Like sometimes I will go to Soho House because they have food.
Yes.
Because Bond Collective doesn't have food. They have snacks, but they don't have food.
Yep.
And, you know, so it's interesting because it's like, as we get back to being those busy humans we were pre-pandemic, and we've lost a lot of our patience for things like commutes and wait times, like we want it now. And so having to go procure food can be a problem.
If I told you that this just was feedback that a client gave me, a member gave me 30 minutes ago, you probably wouldn't be surprised. But I just got off a call with one of our corporate clients, our enterprise customers, that's adding more seats. So we're thankful for that. But, you know, just checking in on feedback, we could always use more food, right? I mean, that's just the reality. Yeah. And as I work from our space, you know, I get busy, and the easiest thing for me to do would be to have that power lunch and grab a sandwich. So we want to grow our menu. It's already happening, but we're not doing enough. That's the learning. And then you asked about the event side. It's absolutely that too. The other thing I'll say that's completely related to that is when we're serving the types of events that we're doing, we're not typically yet working with many corporate event planners at the 2,000 person scale, right? A large event for us is 200 people. And the point that I'm making there is at that size and below, there's not typically someone in the company whose job is to handle these events. And I know as somebody who's producing the events that you're producing, you know very well that it takes a lot to get these things off the ground. And even a 100 person event, you have some staffer on your team who is supposed to be doing something else, right? And they've taken on this extra thing. So we've just discovered that the easier we can make that process from booking to F&B to logistics, that's just a service opportunity. So we're leaning into that, and we're trying to just take a lot of that burden off those planners' plates, and it makes it easy for them to say, yes, 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 let's move forward.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I really appreciate when people have dedicated folks to help you, because then they're just sitting there going, how can I make this better for them?
Yes.
Which is wonderful and what you want from a hospitality standpoint. So clearly, you have thought about the future of work a lot, and I have some definite thoughts on it as well, but I'm curious on, like, where do you think this is going? Like, because we are going to have a huge office reset later this year. There will be tons of opportunity that leads from that, but, you know, I think the term office is going to become antiquated. I think that people will no longer go to the office. People will go somewhere to work, and that it won't be called the office anymore. It's just called where you work. And it'll be sometime at home. It'll be sometime in a third place. And the third place to me is like the coffee shop, because it's on the way to your meeting, or the restaurant because it's convenient, and time in co-working spaces, because co-working spaces are going to win in the long run because they understand community and belonging. So that's where I think it's going. I think offices will end up being these tiny places where people occasionally go because they're required to.
Yeah, I love the way you describe that. I share a lot of the same sentiment, but one thing that I really want to point out is, and so agreeing with most of what you just said, we're going to get a lot more offerings, differentiation, the real estate transition, whatever we're calling what's going to happen next.
I'm calling it a correction, because a crash scares people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's completely fair. I think it's a beautiful opportunity is the way I look at it. And undoubtedly, it's going to create more room for choice. There is going to be a lot more things that pop up. I hope, right? I mean, unless it's some sort of mass real estate play and everyone buys these opportunities out before the creative people get in there. But my point in all that is you mentioned it on the front side of this conversation, that there is going to be more of something for everybody. And so for us, we're just tripling down on the signal that we already have, which is that remote work and hybrid work is happening, and it's going to continue to grow. It might stabilize, but there's already so much of this happening. And you said something, in a different way. I describe flex, remote, hybrid, the ability to go from the coffee shop or a third space to an office. The driver of all that is distilled down to choice. And we have choice. And that is such a beautiful thing. And even if you're a employee with a return to office mandate of once per week, I think what sometimes we get caught up on in our industry is how many times should they be in the office and how much of that is good for operators. The reality is if I have to go to an office one day per week, that means that 4 days out of the week, I have choice. It's not just work from home, right? I get to choose if I'm in a third space, if I'm in a co-working space, if I'm in my home office. And because that is happening, that is a growing behavior. We're just going to continue to find more flexibility. So I think that we're actually not at peak flexibility. You asked about the platform. We built an app, we built a software because we want choice to be very easy and we want to connect people. Coming from a tech background, community and co-working is largely valued upon the IRL experience, right? The human to human, belly to belly, in real life stuff. And that's a beautiful thing. We're not going to try to take that away, but there is a lot of community on the internet. Social media has proven this, obviously, for the last 15, 20 years. Community can also happen online. And so part of building a platform, building a software system, building an app is so that we can keep people connected, keep that community going beyond the four walls, because choice is going to happen. And we have plenty of happy members that come to GP once a month, right? They're plugged into the community. They show up to an event. They show up to a happy hour, but they might have only sat down at a workstation once that month. They're not rushing to cancel their membership. So for us, we want to explore what the limits are of membership through that lens, because I think that its utilization to me no longer looks exclusively like a spreadsheet. I have 75 offices. I need to sell 75 offices. That is purely a real estate arbitrage play. To be quite frank, that doesn't excite me as a business. What excites me is connecting humans in the way that they're actually doing life and actually getting work done. And so being at the cusp of pressing a button and I get that office on demand, or, you know, having a great event because I'm a part of a club, the GP, and I get my ticket on the app. And by the way, I can, you know, DM Liz and make sure that she's showing up and we can order our cocktail, and all these things experientially that happen on the platform is what I describe as our next 5 years.
I love that. I love that. And I think it's really smart. I'm always like, don't build your own software. You're not a software company, but you actually have a software company. So you guys, that's why he's getting a pass on this.
To clarity too, we're built on top of Nexidus. So there is a half of this system is unique IP, and the blocking and tackling is using the Nexidus API.
Love that. And just for the record, the second the pandemic was over, my Megatrends was all it said all over it was what changed was choice.
What changed was choice.
And I love that, like, in other parts of the world, people don't have choice. And as Americans, we are honorary and we are going to have this choice, whether corporate America likes it or not. And I love that.
This is true.
So good. Okay. So Tim, final question. I don't know where the time went, but here it is. So what question should I have asked you that I didn't? And then after you come up with that great question, you have to answer it.
Yeah, I think that I might be a little bit stumped, but there is, I don't know, Liz, I think maybe you should be deeply interested in what we believe staffing should look like versus other spaces. Uh-oh. You know, like, I think,
well,
like,
as somebody that just recently launched a recruitment business, I'm all ears, tell me.
Yeah, I think that, well, one other thing that I keep recognizing as a trend, and, you know, most of the time I speak to the independent operator lens, and I'm sometimes concerned or not, I'm not interested in what the enterprise approach to office looks like, because that's not what I do, right? And I respect that, but it's just not what my product is. I love this idea of the workplace hospitality trend. You've invited me to talk more about that next week, and this is definitely something I'm opinionated on, but I think there's room for invisible hospitality. I think that you're going to see that continue to bubble up, and hopefully somebody does it well, because I've seen a lot of poor attempts at it, meaning, you know, I walk in the door, I don't see anybody, and hopefully that operation is running smooth enough that people stick around. But we took the opposite approach, which is where we're, you know, heavily staffed. And I think that's risky and scary for a lot of people on day one as an independent operator to jump into the business or the industry like we're doing or like we have done, without the membership count to support that, it seems pretty scary. But if we're going to position ourselves as a club, and you know, we came reluctantly to that place because we were different from the start, we need to be staffed. We need to have we need to make sure that we set the tone, have a great first impression. And I think that it's harder to do, not impossible. I think you're going to see more of this pop up, but I think it's a lot harder to do when you have, when you're understaffed or when you're automated and you can't actually really own the experience. And all that to say, the staffing conversation and how to set experience is something that I'm pretty passionate about right now, because I think that is the differentiation between a club and experience, something that's service and you can feel, versus something that you hope to happen inorganically or that your members kind of step up to do. We've taken the path that we want to be a done for you. We want to be a serviced experience, and that doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, I totally hear you. And as somebody that regularly drops in on spaces with no notice, it is very common for me to have a bad experience because I can't get in the door. Or once I get in the door, they don't know what to do with me, or nobody's available to give me a tour or whatever. Like it is a really, really hard one. And many, many times in my career, I have hired people not knowing how I was going to make the numbers work, and then made the numbers work. And the numbers worked because I hired that person. And it's scary and it's a risk. But sometimes, you know, as an entrepreneur, that's how you get to the next level. And one thing is very clear, Tim. I hear a little bit of, I feel like you've got a little bit of imposter syndrome, and we need to smash that, because you are killing it. You are killing it. And everybody has imposter syndrome. I freaking hate that term. Everybody thinks everybody else has it together and they're still figuring it out. We were 100% are all still figuring out. Beyonce is still figuring it out. We don't all know. And we're all just figuring it out. We're all just humans on a journey. And we're, at the end of the day, we're just walking each other home.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And thank you for the validation. This is where community lives, right? This is where you can kind of break out of that. And that's why, you know, being a part of the industry and being a part of a community with other operators certainly helps. But I also say that there's imposter syndrome, and then there's a little bit of hubris built in there too, right? We are like quite proud to be doing what we're doing in South Florida, and we don't know where the future is going to take us. It's not going to be limited to one location. That wasn't the plan, or is not, you know, the end of the roadmap. Mm-hmm. But I'm quite happy that we don't always make national news, because we're serving a very happy community, and the limits, like I said, I haven't identified the limits yet. We even though we've sold all our seats, it doesn't mean the business is done growing.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And that is why we asked you to be on stage, because you know your stuff, and we super appreciate it. And y'all, I just have to tell this one story. Tim's heard it so many times, he's sick of it. But how this started with Tim and I is, Lisa Skye met Tim and then told me, she challenged me. She's like, he doesn't want to be part of the industry. And I'm like, oh, really? And I decided I was going to make him part of the industry. And I have.
She did it. It's true. Liz did it. It's the only reason why I'm connected to any other co-working operator.
Yeah. And there's a few people I'm still stalking that also have a similar feel. And I'm like, oh, no. We will get you. We will wear you down, because you need to be a part of this. So anyway, I can't wait to see you next week. Thank you so much for your time and doing this on the fly, Tim. You're the best.
Thank you, Liz. See you next week.
Thank you for tuning into the Juicy Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and follow us for more juicy content. You can stay connected with us on social media by following us at Juicy Global. We're looking forward to having you join us next time for more insightful discussions. Until then, keep exploring the co-working world with the Juicy Podcast. Ciao.